Good morning, everybody. I'm really sorry that I can't be with you all in person. And it's great to see your names on the screen and your faces. And we are so lucky to have this new way of practicing together. And I'm grateful to Kate and Michael and to all other Sangha members. Susan and River, I know, who's the Zoom master, and others of you, Kay, Remick, so many others who make this possible. We are so lucky to be able to practice together. And after all these years, we're doing it this way, and it kind of makes us feel even more how precious it is. At least that's how I feel. Point number one of the Buddha's teaching, the first noble truth, is that what we call reality is unreliable. It's flimsy, it's subject to constant change and deterioration, it can't even last for a moment's moment. And we create suffering for ourselves by refusing to see that this is true. And if we didn't know this before, I think we're getting to know it now. That what we have relied on, that what we've taken to be normal life, that we're hoping to resume as soon as possible, actually never was normal and never was reliable. It never has been. A little virus turns us upside down. It has always made sense to most people, I think, in the face of such radical unreliability, to try our best to look the other way, to think about something else, and work as hard as we can to establish somehow a secure life anyway, or at least do the best we can. But the Buddha had another idea. He taught us that if you practice sincerely, relying on awakening itself as a natural human birthright, relying on the teachings and on the practice and on the Sangha, then with your effort, it really is possible to overcome life's radical unreliability by completely seeing it and completely embracing it. And in doing that, becoming free of it and having some deep satisfaction and happiness. I know that all of you listening to me now already know this, but here at the outset of our weekend retreat, it's good to remind us about it again. That this is why we're sitting here. So that we can develop the capacity to fully enter our life as it truly is. And in doing that, to be able to find the beauty in it, no matter what is going on. So in that spirit, this morning I want to bring up the sixth case of the Blue Cliff Record, Yunmun's Every Day's a Good Day. But as a kind of introduction to that, I'll ruminate a little bit about Yunmun and his life and teachings. Yunmun was born in 864, not 1864, 864 in Jiaxing, a town between Shanghai and Hangzhou on the eastern coast of China. And that was a time, as in many other times in Chinese history, a time of great political upheaval. Just a few decades before that, from 842 to 845, the government had banned Buddhism completely, and hundreds of thousands of monks and nuns were forcibly returned to lay life. Temples were closed, monasteries were closed, sometimes destroyed, and the government made a concerted effort to smash Buddhism altogether in China. But, of course, it went underground. And by 864, the central government was losing its power, and there were lots of areas in China where all kinds of cultural and political foment was going on. And in this area where Yunmen lived, the Chan movement, which was pretty rough and ready and independent-minded, was gaining strength. We don't know much about Yunmen's parents or about his early life, but we do know that as a young boy, he entered a local temple, probably in his town, where the study was of the Vinaya, the monastic rule. There was a school of Buddhism that was devoted to studying monastic conduct. So he probably lived at that temple and studied that as a young boy, and then when he was 20, he went to a larger town nearby. That's the usual age, according to the Vinaya, for the minimum age for ordination, and so he was ordained at the age of 20 as a monk and continued his Vinaya practice. So he lived a pretty strict monastic lifestyle. But at the age of about 25, he began to have serious doubts. He had a spiritual crisis of some kind. He could not be any longer satisfied with the way he was practicing. So he felt he needed to seek out specifically a Chan teacher, because Chan, which is Zen, was known as a practice that would engage doubts, would engage passions and questions head on, and would help people to see their true selves. So off he went looking for a Chan master. He went to see Chan teacher Muzhou, who lived about 70 miles upstream from Hangzhou. Muzhou had been a monk with the famous Huangbo in a big monastery for many years, but he left the monastery to return home to take care of his old mother. And so he was living quietly in the town of Muzhou. And that's where he gets his name, from the place, Muzhou. The name Yunmen is also a place name, Cloud Mountain, which is where Yunmen finally settled. And I think it's interesting that Chan people in ancient China were always named after the places where they lived. And I've always felt like this means that they were not so much persons, and maybe they didn't understand themselves so much as persons, and I don't think the tradition saw them so much as persons, as voices to express the spirit of the places where they lived. So Muzhou was the voice, the spirit of Muzhou, and Yunmen was the voice, the spirit of Yunmen. So when that place on earth, Muzhou, wanted to speak, it spoke through the mouth of the Zen monk, former monk, Muzhou. And when Yunmen, Cloud Mountain, wanted to speak, it spoke through the voice of the Chan monk named Yunmen. So this is the story told about their first meeting. I'm more or less reading from the translation of the record of Yunmen. Muzhou's door was always shut, and he seldom entertained visitors. And when he did open his door to someone, he was often pretty short. When Yunmen knocked at his door, he didn't open it up. He just yelled out from inside, "Who is it?" And Yunmen said, "It's me, Yunmen." No response. Didn't get in. That happened a number of times over several days, and finally Yunmen was getting desperate and tried to force his way in. And Yunmen said, Muzhou said to him, "Why do you keep coming back?" And Yunmen said, perhaps somewhat desperately, "I'm not clear about myself." Muzhou said, "A bunch of ancient Chinese drills," which more or less means useless stuff, a useless tool that will never be used. And as he said this, he pushed Yunmen out the door and shut his foot in the door. And as the text then says, Yunmen gained understanding. And that's the pretty famous story of the meeting of these two. What a great story. At first you might think, wow, what a rough guy. Maybe, but remember, this is a guy who had left monastic life to come home to take care of his mother, probably very kindly, in a sensitive way, someone who was devoted to taking care of people and knew how to do that. In those days, Chan was known, as it still is, sort of more or less now, as a no-nonsense practice. Not sentimental, no veneer of politeness or sweetness. Even now, Zen doesn't proselytize or try to entice many people to join. Zen is a way of practice that it really makes no sense to try to talk somebody into. People either see for themselves that it's important to them, or they don't. So in a way, people always complain about Zen, it's very unwelcoming. But I don't think it's really unwelcoming. Rather, it really leaves it up to you. It leaves you alone, which for some of us can be quite a blessing. We find out for ourselves. We ourselves develop the desire to practice. No one can talk us into it. No one can teach that to us. And Yunmen's cry, "I'm not clear about myself," is also our cry. The modern conditioned self is very, very different, I'm sure, from the conditioned self of a 9th century Chinese person. So I doubt very much that Yunmen had the kind of problems with himself that we might have today with ourselves. And yet, as far as I can tell, there is a certain sort of pain baked in to the idea of being a person that we human beings have always had. This is the human sickness, this problem of being a self-conscious individual in a world with others. We know we're going to die. We feel the need to be loved and to love. This is a big problem for us. And it's not your fault. You might have various psychological problems, but your basic problem goes beyond all of that. You are human, so you are not clear about yourself. And although on the surface it might not seem like it, Master Muzhou's response is wonderfully compassionate. Although he's not very consoling, is he? He says to Yunmen, Nonsense, nonsense. The problem of the self is not to be solved. Just throw it away. Throw yourself away. That's what you have to do. As Dogen puts it, study yourself to forget yourself, to be free of yourself, to let the world and others come forward to awaken you. And the self we carry about that is such a big problem for us really is a useless Chinese drill built by an ancient emperor for a gigantic building project that was never built, never even begun. A big, clumsy object taking up a lot of space to no purpose. And there is no way to overcome this, no way to be liberated from this. So he shuts the door on him. Some versions of the story say he broke his foot when he closed the door, and that's how Yunmen became awakened. Some other versions just say he simply closed the door. Anyway, the point, either way, is clear. The problem of the self, he's telling him, is a made-up problem. It's a conceptual problem. Instead, just plunge into the heart of your life right now. Give yourself always completely to what's here and don't hold anything back. Find what you need right here. After that, Yunmen stayed in Muzhou practicing for a while until Muzhou thought he should meet other teachers. And maybe he should enroll in the Chan monastery. So he sent him off to Xuefeng's place. Yunmen arrived there and he bowed to Xuefeng in the ceremonial way. Xuefeng, in response, said to him, "How could it come to this?" And Yunmen was profoundly silent. And then our text says, "For many a cold and hot season, Yunmen went to question Xuefeng at dawn and dusk." How could it come to this? What a wonderful phrase that we could be applying all the moments of time of our lives. How could it come to this? Here we are, bizarrely, all of us, sitting alone in our homes, practicing Zen together on Zoom, as the whole world is turned upside down and literally obsessed with a tiny, invisible virus that's only doing what it needs to do. How could it come to this? I think Xuefeng understood intuitively the moment he met Yunmen that he had met his greatest Dharma successor. And here he comes, out of the blue. How could it come to this? When I first started coming to Mountain Rain, before it was even called Mountain Rain, many years ago, I was young and vigorous. And now I'm a broken down old Zen guy. How could it come to this? The world used to be simpler and nicer, or so I believe. How could it come to this? Yunmen spent probably 10 or 15 years at Xuefeng's monastery, many a cold and hot season. There's another version of that same story of how they met for the first time, a completely different version. And this is the one that you usually see in the Zen accounts. So I'll tell you this second story too. When Yunmen arrived at the village at the foot of Mount Xuefeng, he met a monk who was also going up to meet Xuefeng. And Yunmen asked this monk if he would say something to Xuefeng on his, Yunmen's, behalf, but not let on that the words were not his own. And this monk agreed that he would do this. So Yunmen gave him these instructions. He said, after your arrival at the monastery, the abbot will take the high seat in the Dharma hall to give a formal talk, and the assembly will gather, and as soon as that happens, just jump up and go forward and say, hey old guy, why don't you rid yourself of the iron kang around your neck? You know, you have an iron kang around your neck. Why don't you get rid of it? Say that to him. A very challenging, nervy thing to say. And I can't really imagine why this nameless monk would ever have agreed to do such a thing, but the story says that he did. So when the time came, he went forward, he said these words that he was supposed to say, and in response, Xuefeng leaped out of his seat, grabbed the monk by the collar, and shouted at him, speak, speak! Which is a very usual thing in Zen practice, because in Zen practice, possibly Zen is unique in this, it's very, very important that you express yourself, that you always be ready to express your practice, because in Zen practice, the expression of your practice is the practice. It's not something extra. Because there's no Dharma, as we understand. There is no Dharma until we bring it forth alive. So, it often happens in Zen stories where the teacher grabs you and says, speak, speak! And the monk didn't have any answer, didn't say anything, and Xuefeng let him loose and he said, these words you said were not your own. And the monk said, no, they were. And so Xuefeng said, oh yeah, and he called an attendant forward to tie him up and drag him away. And at that point the monk admitted, okay, they weren't my words. There was a monk down below in the village who asked me to say this. Xuefeng told the monks of the monastery to go down into the village and find this Yunmen and bring him, welcome him as a great Zen master. The next day, Yunmen ascended the mountain. As soon as Xuefeng saw him, he asked, and how did you reach such a state? And Yunmen lowered his head with humility. And after this, Yunmen and Xuefeng were like two sides of a coin, like one with two sides. So that's the story as it's usually told. I guess somewhat elaborated over many repetitions. This trope of having someone else pretend to be you asking your question is repeated several times in the Zen canon. And it's very apt because most of the time this is exactly what we do. We set up a person we think of as ourselves, and we're quite convinced that this person is ourself. And we ask this person not only to ask our questions, but to live our life. And this fake person, whom we are totally convinced is us, has a pretty hard time living our life. To practice Zen is to become the person we actually are, and to live the life we are actually given to live. This is our job in practice, to see through that fake person. Maybe appreciate her, but see through her. Once, many years later, when Yunmen was practicing on his own mountain, a monk asked him, "What's the problem?" And Yunmen said, "You don't notice the smell of your own shit." In other words, your smelliness, your confusion, your ignorance, it's right there all the time, totally on the surface, right in the open. And awakening is seeing it and knowing it for what it is. Always it's there, apparent, but we're blind to it. We can't smell ourselves because we're hoping for some nicer fragrance. And we don't realize it's not a matter of getting a better smell or getting rid of the nasty smell. It's a matter of really smelling it. Another time a monk asked him, "What's wrong about someone who's in the dark about himself?" And Yunmen said, "This is no problem for an awakened person." You are a great mystery. It's not that there's something mysterious about you. You're all there, right as you are. And I can see you, even though you're only a tiny square on a screen. And so can everyone else. Your depth, your beauty, your pain, your confusion, it's right there for everyone to see. There's no place to hide. I think we should all have much more doubt about ourselves, about who we think we are, what we think is going on. We should be more curious, less certain about everything. And we should never be afraid to be foolish. Okay, now I get to the story. Case 6, Blue Cliff Record. Yunmen said, "I don't ask about before the 15th day. Try to say something about after the 15th day." And no one said anything. So as he often did, he answered his own question. "Every day's a good day." The 15th day probably refers to the monthly monastic ritual of confession, which in the monasteries happens by the Vinaya rule of ancient times every 15 days on the new moon and on the full moon. And we sometimes practice this too when we do our full moon ceremony. We sit after the ceremony, or I think before the ceremony, I forgot now. We sit together and we talk about how we're practicing the precepts, the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. How well have we been keeping the precepts? What have we been paying attention to? What have we been falling down on? And then we vow to one another that we'll do better. So in other words, the 15th day of the month, the 15th day is a day of purification. It's a day of confession and starting over again fresh. So Yunman's question on the one hand is about purification, but in Zen, purification and awakening are the same thing. So he's saying, I don't ask about before awakening, I ask about after awakening, and then he says, every day is a good day, meaning before, after, is there really any difference? What are we talking about? What is reality on this moment? Purification, not purification, awakening, not awakening, ideas. What is really going on now? Be clear about yourself right now. Every day is a good day. This reminds me of the Bible. In Genesis, when God creates things on each of the 6 days, and at the end of the day, God says, it is good. This is just like Yunman saying, every day is a good day. It's not a happy face. It's all good. Whatever. It's all good. It's not that. This coronavirus time is good. We get a much needed pause. Maybe we can restart our world in a better way. I hope so. Maybe if you're an older person like me, it makes you realize, wait a minute, I have to slow down. I'm older. This is making me slow down. Maybe I can get to know my spouse a little better now that we're home together 24/7 and seeing nobody else. Maybe I can find out who she really is. Maybe I can appreciate the sunrise, the sunset, the moon at night, and the flowers that are so profuse this spring. Plus, I can write quite a bit more poems than usual. Nobody's bothering me. It's all good. And really, that's true in my life. I hope it's true in your life. And I pray that everyone is okay. None of you are in trouble in any way with income, with housing, with food, and that you're in good health and that you'll stay safe. It's all good. But no, it is not good. This is really a terrible time because people are sick, and this is not a pleasant disease. And people are dying, and people are frightened. Maybe people are slowly becoming unhinged, and maybe more and more people will be becoming unhinged. And the economic and psychological suffering that we will experience, which might last for quite a while, is likely to be pretty terrible. And it will, of course, affect disadvantaged communities disproportionately. And the injustice that was already pretty hard to take will be even harder to take. So we cannot say this is a good time. This is a terrible time. When Yunman says every day is a good day, he means all of this. just as God is not naive. When God creates the world this way, with night and day and sky and earth and creatures of land and air and sea and intelligent gendered human beings who can make stuff and have passions, do you think that God doesn't already know what's going to happen? So when God says, it's good, it includes all the catastrophes that are unavoidable if there are going to be living beings in time and space. Because those beings will have something, they will lose that thing, and they will die. Every day is a good day describes this great and ineffable reality. All of it as it is. And to practice every day is a good day, we have to turn toward, not away from, the suffering. We have to admit how terrified we are and face the truth about living and dying and about how terrible it is to be a human being. All the truly horrible things we have done to one another and continue to do that are all actually still in us right now. And this is really hard. We would rather have a nice idea in our minds about how we are, how things are. Naturally, we avoid the dark truth. We try to think about something else. Or maybe we do the opposite. We think about the darkness all the time. We think about it and think about it and think about it and read analyses and books and articles and listen to podcasts and documentaries so we can drive ourselves absolutely crazy in order to distract ourselves from actually taking in the bloody facts which are right here, immediate in the body and in the heart. So first we have to appreciate how scared we are of the actual lives we are already anyway living every single day. And then we have to face the pain and see that in the pain is the goodness. I'm not saying that pain is redeeming or good. It's not. Pain is pain. It's difficult. It's unpleasant. But only through and in and with the pain can there be love. And yes, that love itself is painful, even terrible. But that is what makes it so poignant and so beautiful and so essential for our lives. And oddly, and to me this is the great genius of our Zen ancestors and their teaching, oddly, when we have the courage to open ourselves to this difficult truth about our life, we will have some happiness, true and profound happiness. And we can be steadfast, stable and strong, loving, and we can have complete confidence that no matter what, every day is a good day. So again, I'm thanking all of you for being here, thanking especially the Sangha leaders who work so hard to make this possible and keep things going every day. And now I guess somehow we're going to chant and end our Dharma talk period. Thank you. Equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Inexhaustible. To end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become it.
Meditation or standing meditation or just stretching at your cushion. Please also check your chat message. For those of you who have received a message from me, have your device, meaning your phone or tablet, ready. There will be a few people waiting, so please be patient. Continue keeping our sadhana.